Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we begin, wanted to remind you all about the Union Community, a private safe space for goalkeepers to engage, educate, and entertain one another away from the vitriol of social media. To download free, go to the Union Community on Apple or Google Play stores or www.theunionsports.com. Thanks a lot for making the Union possible, and on with the show. West Hollywood, California. That's an introduction I never thought I would ever be able to give. With me, with not a cloud in the sky, though, even though she's only 10 miles away, 99 World Cup winner Saskia Weber, and joining us from a very balmy and warm Pennsylvania right now, we've got the one and only Philadelphia Union head of academy goalkeeping, Carl Spratt. Carl, I can't believe we haven't had you on the show yet. This is amazing. We've heard so many great things about you.
I hope you can send me the addresses that people I have to pay to say good things about me. So.
Well, honestly,
appreciate
man,
you guys having me on, I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I mean, for some people that might not be familiar with you out there, who might be in different parts of the world or whatever, and said, "Man, you're really, really going to the bottom of the barrel right over here." You're actually I'm totally joking right there. Honestly, we've had so many goalkeeper coaches reaching out to us, tell us that you have to come on. But why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do over at Philadelphia Union?
Yeah. I've been working with the Union now for the last couple of years. My role with the Union directly involves on a day-to-day basis with our second team. I'm the goalkeeper assistant coach with Union 2. And then through that, I oversee everything down from the second team all the way down through our academy. So kind of a role that's centered around youth development, which provides many different challenges, but many wonderful opportunities on a daily basis. And then I work closely with Phil Wedden, who I know that you guys know really well. So I'm on the field every day with Phil down here in Chester. So it's a very fulfilling role. Like I said, a role that provides a ton of different challenges, and I get to work with varying level of goalkeepers on a daily basis.
I mean, I absolutely love that, man. And, you know, Saskia and I, we've talked about this in regards to that integration within a club system where you have people that are working with the professional club that are also involved with youth development. Because Saskia, I don't know how many times you've seen it where it's kind of an island, the two projects.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that there's a connection there, it gives a youth something to aspire to. It gives them a direct attachment to the senior club, you know, and it creates instant fans and followings, and you know, it gives those kids something to strive for. If you have that big disconnect, like, you know, if just an example, don't anybody blow me up. But if you have like the Galaxy, you know, Academy and stuff, and they're like not even around or attached or have anything to do with the senior club, there's a disconnect and you want it to all be one family.
Yeah. By the way, anybody at the LA Galaxy, she was literally just using an example.
I'm like, oh my God, there goes like right there. My Twitter. I'm like,
Carl's like, I don't know what happened, but they're not able to get anybody from the LA Galaxy on their show anymore. I don't know what.
Yeah, my microphone cut out there, so I didn't hear anything you said. I'm just pleased with it on that one. I have no idea what you're talking about, Saskia.
It was just an example.
Oh my God. And by the way, Carl, feel free to step in at any time. Don't wait for any questions or whatever. But I do have a question for you in regards to something that a lot of people have said to me. Is they said it's very difficult to work in the professional environment and the youth environment at the same time. You're balancing between the two, literally hopping from one field to the other. How do you balance that?
Well, first of all, I think like anything, my grandfather used to say something when I was growing up, that something's only difficult if you think it's going to be difficult, right? And I think, you know, that's a message that can be kind of spread across all levels of football, but it's something that our players kind of pick up on it as well, right? I mean, our goalkeeper club, our core, from Phil, myself with the second team and overseeing the academy, and then we have two full-time guys, Charlie Sales and Micah Collins. We probably talk to each other more on a daily basis, kind of whether it's through our different platforms or, you know, just simple phone calls, more than I kind of speak to my family, right? So I think it's one of them ones where the regular contact that we have really helps the relationships. And I think relationships and culture is centered around that, everything that the club here at the Union is really building towards. The level of difficulty is, you know, yeah, listen, I'm not always at the academy, right? So one of the worst things you can do as a coach is take a snapshot, right? So because I'm not at the academy every day, I really try and refrain from taking snapshots, but I'm watching every single academy goalkeeper session. So when, you know, Charlie or Micah pick up the phone on the days that I'm not there and say, hey, listen, I want to talk to you about goalkeeper on action, there's, you know, there's real interest, there's real kind of enthusiasm in that call, so that when we do have them conversations with the boys, you know, they know that we care, right? They know that the relationship is strong. And I think that that takes away any kind of sense of, you know, Carl or Phil aren't here. They're just doing their job. They're just going through the motions. They know that we're reaching out to those guys. We have text messages and clip exchanges nightly, you know, those guys watching their actions, sending it to the group and saying, hey, what do you think? You know, so the challenges are kind of overcome just by the strength of the relationship, I feel.
You know, I love one of the things you said right there. And you know, Saskia, we've talked about this before, you know, on this show and just in person, just in general off the air. But that snapshot thing, Carl, that you're saying right there, Saskia, how many times have you been at a field and some director has walked by and without context, they're like, oh, you know what, you need to be blah, blah, blah or whatever. And they start trying to micromanage, but they're not familiar with the progression of what you're trying to do.
No, absolutely. I think the great thing is that you guys have a philosophy that you can build from the ground up, and like from the youth all the way up to the senior team, and they can see that. I mean, as far as people walking by and snapshots, you know, go get a coffee or something like that, you know, because there is a progression, there is a goal. It's not just random goalkeeper coaches off doing their own thing and trying then eventually to come together. You know, having a core like that and having everybody working together and constantly talking just creates better goalkeepers and coaches. To be honest with you, one of the hardest things is going from an elite level and thinking it's so easy to just all of a sudden coach young academy kids. It's a different style of coaching, and it only makes you a better coach to be able to build that up, you know, from the ground up.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things, Carl, like, you know, in regards to, I love one of the things that you all have going on is that you have that funnel from literally finding grassroots recreational kids in the area and bringing them into the program early on. And that foundational aspect with somebody like Micah, you know, what he's doing over there. Like, can you talk about how important it is to find the kids that are going to be right for that system at such an early age so that you're not retraining at 14, 15, 16 years of age?
Yeah, I mean, we're very fortunate at the Union because when you as a coach come into a role like myself or even, you know, like Phil at the senior team, you know right from the start that it is a club that's the business model is we want to build our own. We want to grow our own. You know, we're not going to go out. And listen, with the first team level, we don't have to, right? We have Andre, who's the best goalkeeper in the league. And, you know, we don't really have to go searching for anything. But even at the academy, you know, we have a real in-depth, detail-oriented kind of scouting network, scouting process. Profiles are clearly identified. And the goalkeeper profile is one that we just want guys to show initiative. We want guys, yeah, they've got to, you know, have certain levels of athleticism. But, you know, when we're looking at players, we really, honestly, in the nicest possible way, we don't really care what they are like right now. Right, we want to look into that magic crystal ball and go, what could this player be like in 4, 5, 6 years time? And that's why our scouting department is so good, is that they'll pass on the ones that everyone is kind of going towards right now because they're the early developer or they have a really special talent or they've got, you know, comfortable in possession. But if there's other aspects missing, they're comfortable going, yeah, he's really good right now, but maybe, you know, through experience, you know what that player is going to look like. And it makes the role so much more identifiable because you're not having to, you know, fit round pegs into square holes, so to speak.
I love how you said that right there, because Saskia, I was just thinking about how many times just when I've been involved in the youth game, I've been at a club and I've seen goalkeepers that quote unquote, they're saying are such so successful. And then I go and I see why their actions are being successful. And is it because of GKIQ? Is it because they're because of the direction, or is it just because they're bigger, stronger, faster than the other 10-year-olds out there?
Well, I mean, I think you get that a lot. You get, okay, that's the really athletic, big, strong goalkeeper back there. And we always talk about, like, why are you having to make these saves? Like, that's GKIQ right there. Like, why? Great. I'm glad you dive to the upper 90 every other save, but could you have taken a step to the left and caught it and stayed on your feet? And like, how did you organize your defense in front of you that you have to see so many difficult shots? Like, that's GKIQ. And when you look at it, yes, you look at athletes and you see where they can be in the future. Are they coachable? Are they trainable? You know, who are they going to be in 5 years? Not who are they now. And that's a really big mistake by coaches out there. You see it a lot in the college game. There's that scramble to get that incoming freshman that's just going to be like the senior that's going out. It's just not going to happen. And if that's what you're looking for, there's maybe one person out there that can fill that role. And the truth is, okay, I'm looking to train. I'm looking where you're going to be in 3 years. If I redshirt you, or if you're in the academy, not where you are now.
You know, and you brought up a good point right there. And Carl, I'm even thinking about this from a developmental standpoint with you all with Philadelphia Union too, is that you may be playing goalkeepers, and I'm not sure what your scenario is going to be for this coming season, but you may be playing goalkeepers that may not quite be ready for that level yet. However, their ceiling for the first team might be higher than somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, excuse me, we have I don't mind kind of sharing this, so. You know, we have one of our goalkeeper last year, Matt Fries, who was a first team contracted goalkeeper. Matt was, you know, traded to NYCFC during this offseason, homegrown boy, homegrown man, and put in some excellent performances for the group last year, like really top level performances. But there was a 13 minute window last year against a game in Orlando where we put in a 16 year old boy into a second team game. And this is a young man who's got, you know, really high potential. He's been training with the second team now for, you know, well into a year and a half. And it has been really difficult for him. Mm-hmm. But this past preseason, you've just started to see what the reason why we did this in the first place. You know, like, is this kid ready to sign a homegrown contract right now? You know, pretty close. If you ask me, I really do. We, you know, Phil and I have had this conversation, but pretty close doesn't mean that he's ready to play. He means he's ready, right, to be immersed into that environment on a consistent basis. So, you know, a year and a half down the road, a lot of video meetings, a lot of investment on his behalf, you know, a lot of detail when it comes to me trying to make sure that my message is clear. And he really is grasping exactly what I'm trying to ask of him. And it's stuff that maybe he's never done before, but a year and a half down the road, you're starting to see, okay, this young man could be something, you know?
Yeah, that's, you know, it's such a good point too, because there's just a fundamental difference between, you know, training and everything, and then stepping onto the big stage and being ready for that as well. I was just talking to a parent. I was coaching a goalkeeper. Yes, I dusted my boots off and I went out and trained a goalkeeper, Morgan, actually. And the question was like, you know, with Alyssa Thompson going in the first in the draft, and her being 18 now, but 17, is there a possibility that a goalkeeper could do that? I said, I would never look for a goalkeeper coming out of high school to go pro. Like, it's just, you know, maybe to develop and everything like that. But I think you're just not there yet. You're not, you know, and it takes, that's why goalkeepers get better with age. And I'm not surprised that when he stepped in, there was just, it wasn't quite there yet. It takes time, and some people don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah. Those 13 minutes, and so, sorry, those 13 minutes.
No, go ahead.
Because it was so unique, right? Because you had to deal with the dynamic of the goalkeeper who was coming off. Like, he wanted that clean sheet, right? He wanted that 90 minutes.
Right.
And I love that response for him. So not only is this young boy, you know, earned the opportunity, he's nervous, and he's seeing, you know, the older goalkeeper coming off not best pleased with the decision that I've made. So like, that interaction is an interesting one for him to manage. But then he goes on the field, and the first action is a back pass to his right hand side under pressure. you know, 99.9% of 16-year-olds would have just put their foot through the ball. He just stands on it, waits to see what the press is doing, makes an alternative decision. And that, to me, you know, I know we're talking about presence today. Like, that is the key. That was that presence that we're talking about. Was, we haven't drew it up. It's not scripted. You know, right. He's probably seen that scenario 1,000 times in training, but in the moment when it counts, he was able to show, right? And I think that's
awesome.
That is really key for us. And it was 13 minutes, and I think he had one save to make, but he got 13 minutes of football the entire year. And he still played his games with the 17s and our development.
But the thing is, you're talking about it, and that's amazing. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's that 13 minutes made such an impression on you, and that's huge. It can totally go the opposite direction as well, which we've seen a lot. But, you know, obviously, you know how I feel about goalkeepers not getting playing time and everything. But when you have the chance, and that's another thing I say, like with academies, with clubs, with ECNL and stuff, nobody's going to care if you won the ECNL championship. Like, I really don't care. Like, you know, way back when you were 14, but I do care how you're developing. And I do care if you're coachable and where you're going to be eventually, not if, you know, you were the champions, you didn't have a single save.
Yeah. You know, and I assume, Carl, you know, and I'm just going to, you know, kind of say this before we kind of move into today's topic, which is goalkeeper presence, as you were just referring to right there, is that, you know, with Philly Union 2, the whole point is either to find players that are going to be able to play competitively on the first team or are going to be developed enough at the professional level to be able to be sold to another club where they can make an impact.
Sounds like cattle, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, I didn't make it sound that ruthless. Jeez.
Are we going to be able to sell him?
But that is the reality, right? Because because a player might be ready to play professional football, but the opportunity at a said club might just not be there because of the goalkeeper hierarchy that we have in place. And I mean, you look around the league now and way before my time, but we have, you know, 5 or 6 academy, Philly Union Academy graduates signing professional contracts, playing in either MLS or USL, you know? And I think that just goes to a testament to the work the club has done. But 100%, like, we're not even entertaining when it gets to kind of the 17s and graduating players up into our second team environment. We're not even entertaining an option if there's not a pathway for the player. And that pathway might be with us, hopefully with us. So, you know, Coach Curtin can kind of select him on a Saturday, or he can go elsewhere and pursue a professional career, in which we're equally as proud and equally as happy for the boy if that is the pathway that kind of they have to go down.
Yeah. I think this is a great segue into today's topic, which is developing goalkeepers' presence, as Carl put up right here. Carl, for maybe some people out there who kind of aren't familiar with kind of, you know, what we're referring to when we talk about presence, like, can you kind of break it down into your own words?
Oh, I mean, I don't think we have a podcast long enough to do in the words, but I think for me, the presence is the goalkeeper's ability to affect and communicate efficiently, whether that be through, you know, actions or just simple verbal communication, can affect a moment or an outcome in the most efficient way possible. You know, I think when we talk about, you know, when I talk about presence and when I do some kind of coach education things, and the first thing you'd say about is our communication. Well, okay, you can hear what is being said, but the presence is how the goalkeeper carries him or herself, how mm-hmm. the goalkeeper enters a room, how the goalkeeper leaves a room, you know, like how the goalkeeper interacts with their peers, interacts with the support staff, interacts with the coaches. It's not just on the pitch. And I think the presence for us is the ability to communicate or influence a moment in the most efficient way possible. And I think that's just a pretty succinct way of kind of summing it up.
For me, like, to add to that, absolutely. And to add to that is, like, is your presence dominant enough that you're dictating what the other team does as well? You know, like, you know, that's, you know, are they seeing you and not the goal? You know, right. So are you dictating where they're putting a free kick because they know they can't put it in around the top of the sticks because you're going to own it, or a corner kick? Or how are you dictating with your presence how somebody's dealing with a 1v1 and everything because they see you? They don't see the goal. They're like, oh, shit, you know, there's Casey Murphy instead of, oh, there's a giant net and I'm just going to tuck it away. And, you know, that's to add to that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Casey, you can send that Venmo to @Cecilia-Weber that. Right,
she has she has the account. She just does it weekly.
Cole, let's kind of break down. So tell us a little bit about these starting points here and these goalkeeper pillars.
Well, I think everyone has, you know, key pillars, right, that they kind of work towards. And everyone talks about the technical, the tactical, the physical, and the psychological. But I think we have a social leadership pillar in there too. And then, you know, if you just kind of move over to the next slide, it just gives you kind of some things that we're looking at. So when we talk about the social leadership component, you know, developing the ability, right, of a goalkeeper to interact effectively. I think that's one of the words that I use when it talks about presence. But I think when necessary and towards a common goal is some key important aspect of it too, right? Not everyone, when you hear a goalkeeper communicating or behaving in a certain way, is on, you know, the right frame of mind. So the ability from a goalkeeper to have a presence to bring everyone together and work towards a common goal is really important. And then the psychological component is just, you know, dealing with the emotional aspect, preparing the goalkeepers for the challenges that's ahead and what's needed, because it is a very specific position, but in a position that has enormous amount of highs and enormous amount of lows through a career too. So when we talk about, you know, the key performance pillars, and we talk about presence, we do really address the psychological component as well as the social leadership component, because I think that's a really good kind of foundation to build upon.
You know, and I'm just even just thinking about Saskia, you know, when Carl was sharing that story about that 16-year-old boy, like those experiences, it like develop his presence moving forward as a professional.
Well, absolutely. And if you take the example of him standing on the ball, choosing a different thing instead of just like kicking the ball, which most like a lot of 16-year-olds.
I would have done. That's what I would have done.
What does that tell your team? Right? That gives confidence in your team. Confidence. You've just stepped on the field, taken out the starting goalkeeper. You know, here you're 16 years old. And instead of being frantic and everything like that, through what you're doing, you've just set a calmness to your team that they feel confident playing the ball back to you now. You didn't get frantic, because had that gone a different way, it could have changed the whole 13 minutes that he was in the game. And so that is like a presence without speaking, without, you know, it's by actions.
Yeah. You know, and I'm just thinking about that, Carl, like in regards to like with your sessions and everything like that and how you're developing your goalkeepers, you know, throughout the program. I'm assuming that if you are painting these pictures so much for them throughout their training that and in their academy matches, that by the time they get to that pro level, they're so used to this picture, their brain, their muscle memory and their, you know, subconscious memory is just like, oh, this is what I do in this picture.
This is what I do, but this is the reason why I do it, right? Yeah. And I think the why is the most important thing that any coach designing a session, having the privilege to work with players, needs to be aware of. And listen, it's something that Phil and I, you know, address on a daily basis. You know, Phil, for all of his experience and his pedigree in the game, still to this day, every single session comes over at the end of it and asks me, what do I think? Right. Mm-hmm. And what do I think? Because, you know, it's not because of me or anybody else. It's just because he wants to be, you know, open and to receive feedback, because then off the back of my feedback, it's an opportunity. If he didn't think the why was clearly evident in that moment, it's a chance for us to discuss about it. And that might maybe kind of rejig my thought process too, right? So these guys coming in, it's what they do, the pictures are painted, but the why is that's why they do it, for the performance criteria, which is the match.
You know, before we move on from this slide right here, Saskia, it's just making me think about the fact that the why is also off the field too, based on behavior, based on the culture at the club. you know, when yet 16-year-old, and again, I'm just using him as an example, you know, is in that locker room with these, you know, 23, 24-year-old men, you know, he knows how to behave because the why has been told to him. This is how you behave in that environment.
Yeah. That's one of those rhetorical ones, Mike.
Oh, come on. I thought you were going to elaborate from your personal experiences.
No, and I agree. But that also comes from the top down. And the off the field that, you know, that is comes from the coaches to the captains to the players. And so when you have a 16-year-old or a 17-year-old, like, you know, Alyssa walking into Angel City and stuff, you know, how that's a learning experience as well. You know, how are you going to act? And you learn from watching how other people are acting and everything. And that comes from the top down. If it's just, if that's not in place, then it you're not going to translate onto the field.
Yeah. You know, Carl, I'm looking at this right here. And first off, you know, thank you for putting this whole presentation together. This is always awesome when people put that time and effort into it. It's making me think of pitch decks. Because I've been in this accelerator program for the last few months. So I'm just like looking at it and I'm like, oh, this is some really good graphics work. I think I could add some of this to my pitch deck. This in regards to the demands of the goalkeeper, is I never thought about that before, but your presence is kind of dictated on what your demands are. If you're in a lower demanding environment, your presence may not necessarily need to be the same as somebody who's in a high pressure environment.
It's an interesting one, right? Because that would be the general rule of thumb. The lower demanding environment is, you could maybe think that, you know, the presence, the demand or the need for a presence is less, but I would probably flip it. I would say that the individual's personal standards should dictate the demand for your presence, right? Because as in this position,
he's got such a presence on the frozen screen.
Yeah. Oh, I think we lost you for right there for a second. Go ahead, Suske.
Yeah, I agree with him though. I think it is flipped. I think if you're in a lower demanding environment, like, look, you've always known that how I feel. A goalkeeper is automatically a leader, a captain on the field and off the field. You know, this is somebody that has to dictate play, has to move their chess pieces around to get the most beneficial response from their team. And whether you're 16 or 36, you need that respect. So it's off the field and on the field. So even in a lower demanding, I don't really know what a lower demanding environment means personally. Like, I don't think I've ever been in a lower demanding environment. So I mean, I'm like, somebody's gonna have to give me that definition, please. But I think that is actually when you have to rise above. Because if your goalkeeper is like, you know, it's a Sunday game. Like when you go and you play with your 30 and over team, I'll throw you a nod right there, Mike.
I play in an open team too with younger.
Okay, but I guarantee your mentality isn't that way. You're coming in there and you're playing. You're like, I have to organize my team. I have to step up. I have to have presence. And we all know how defense is on like Sunday games.
Oh yeah. That's why my back's been injured for the last few months. That's why it's
right. Nobody's playing defense. I mean, the game I played in Washington, I was like, I had like a blinder because nobody was playing defense, but in a lower demanding environment, even though it was a charity game, like I actually had to step up even higher.
Well, you know, I was actually just thinking about this, Saskia, in regards to the fact that, like, if you take, like, let's take the U.S. women's national team, for example, right? This is an environment, it's obviously a high pressure environment, as I add Carl back into the stream right over there.
We were talking about you the whole time you were off, so.
Yeah. That's,
well, after my Wi-Fi just cuts out, I deserve everything that you've just said behind my back. I have no idea. I'm in the stadium, I'm in my office. I'd love to show what's going on, guys. Apologies.
Yeah, okay.
Oh my gosh, we'll have to talk to MLS Communications about that and what the issue is.
They probably cut us off after my Galaxy comment.
but I was just saying, Saskia, just the fact that, like, if you're talking about a high pressure situation like the U.S. women's national team, for instance, where literally yesterday they gave up, I think, their first goal in 2023 in all competitions at the senior first team level of the women's national team.
Are you considering that a lower pressure environment because you're not as engaged in the game?
I'm saying it's a high pressure environment because the fact is that like you give up one goal.
Oh my gosh, forget about it. You get no saves and one goal against. It's the worst thing ever. Like at Rutgers, I was making like 15 saves a game and we'd win like 3-2 or something. And it was great. Like, you know, but for the US team, yeah, it's tough because it's like, oh, well, they look at it. And like when I was playing, Tony and them looked at it like, all right, you let up a goal. Let's go look at somebody else. You know what I mean? Like you've let up one goal in 2 years. Maybe we need to look at somebody else. Like, you know, so it's a high pressure environment.
So let's see how we build that person in this high pressure environment to have that type of presence, Carl. So why don't you add on here?
Yeah. So something that I like to kind of do with especially the academy guys, because as we get to into our second team and our senior players, they have these attributes. Ultimately, that's why they've ended up, you know, signing a contract, right? But I like to kind of break it down into three kind of phases: building the person, building the player, building the competitor. And I think, you know, the person is the entry point of everything that we do here. It's the culture. There's something that I think is so simple but so powerful here, and it was one of the key things that I noticed when I joined the organization a couple of years ago, is that no matter what your role is in the organization, you will walk into the room and there will be a handshake with eye contact. And it was so kind of, I guess, such a novelty, you know, because how many times you greeted with like a fist bump or a wave or a nod. But the kind of history behind that is the founders of the club and the founders of the academy want everyone to know that in that moment, like, I am present, right? I'm going to look you in the eye. I'm going to shake your hand and I'm going to hold on to your hand until you look at me in the eye to say that you're present in that moment too. So when we talk about the person, that is a really important part. And obviously some of the traits, you know, confidence, passionate about, you know, what they're doing. It could be whether they're in YSE in the school or whether it be on the pitch, responsible for their own actions, have a certain level of resiliency and have a, you know, a really key individual-based personality, not just wanting to kind of go along with a crowd, especially if you feel that something isn't, you know, doesn't suit the who you are. You want to be kind of an individual and be willing to express that personality. So, you know, these are some of the traits we talk about building the person. And I think it's just a really important place to start, you know.
You know, and Saskia, I think that the behaviors of the coach throughout the project, if, you know, to call the goalkeeper a project or the academy a project, is so massive in developing, building all of this, especially the resiliency aspect of it. Because I think the behaviors of the coach sometimes can affect goalkeeper negatively that way.
Oh my gosh. I won't say it by name, but I'll bring up a goalkeeper who, you know, has come into her own and is doing awesome and everything like that. 3 years ago was a shell of that person because of the behaviors of the coach. And because of the coach taking that, which none of us, I hope Carl doesn't, but that screaming and that blaming and that breaking the person down and more because the coach isn't secure with themselves and there's not, you know, and they're not obviously teaching properly. And so they're getting yelled at and they're turning on to that keeper was going to quit. That keeper would never be where they are now. And I'm not, you know, not saying who her coach was after that, but but it does have a direct effect, and that's why I always say it comes from the top down. You have to lead by example.
Yeah, you know, and as my light literally falls off my laptop, leading by example, I'm going to deal with the resiliency. I'm going to be resilient, and I'm going to move forward despite the fact that my light just fell down. Much like when Carl's Wi-Fi went out, he just
stop
came back on.
Stop deflecting and stop deflecting. Stop getting me back into this. Listen, I thought I'd skated away from that.
Listen, but don't get me wrong. I think that we've talked about this. It's a great, you have to take the goalkeepers as individuals. There is a blanket thing, but all goalkeepers have different personalities, you know, and are going to react and thrive in different environments. It's not a blanket way, you know, you have to have a baseline as a coach and how you coach and everything like that. But you also have to identify that things are not working off the field or are not working for an individual and be able to transition per goalkeeper.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that, Carl. Just, you know, that psychosocial is different depending on who you're working with in your program.
100%, 100%. Mm-hmm. I mean, the slightly, you know, fitting with what we're talking about, but I remember 3 or 4 years ago when I worked at the previous club, I was at the New England Revolution for 11 seasons. So when I was up in New England, I remember going on a scouting mission to watch this young goalkeeper. And it was a goalkeeper. His dad was Polish. I knew the family. I knew of the family. You know, all the feedback, the history was great. And I went to watch this young boy play. And his dad was behind the goal, and he was speaking Polish to his son. And his son let a couple of goals, let up a couple of goals. He was having a great game. The goals had nothing to do with the goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. And I just walked over and I was like, I introduced myself. I said, "Oh, do you mind me asking what you were saying to your son?" And he said, "All I was saying is, don't give up, don't give up, don't give up." Right? Which, that's nothing wrong with that, right? But I was watching the player, and the player was thinking, my dad's saying, don't give up. I didn't think I was giving up, but because my dad's saying it, am I giving up? Mm-hmm. And just that, like, that moment there, and I didn't, you know, you've got to be very careful about not, you know, trying to give advice on parenting or anything like that. I was just curious. And honestly, this gentleman was doing nothing untowards. He was just trying to encourage his son. But by saying them words, don't give up, it almost went a completely opposite way, to a point where the son was thinking, wow, like, if my dad's saying it, don't do something, that must mean I'm doing it, right? So that psychosocial moment in the moment, it'll stick with me for the rest of my life. You know, it really will, because we've all said things in a positive way, but you just never sure really how it's perceived in that moment, you know?
Right.
And going back to your moment, it's everything. The moment is everything.
Yeah, that's a great
Carl point. I love one of the things you just said right there, because it was making me think of a moment a few years back when, and this made me think about goalkeepers taking things differently depending on who the person is. And I said, that's how you do it. That's awesome. Clean hands, you know, nice and consistent. And the person said before, he's like, I always thought my hands were pretty clean.
And yeah, it's the same thought process. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's one of those things where, like, I do this probably so many times throughout my sessions, because I'm trying to, whether because I'm in a group setting and I'm trying to set an example for everybody. So I'll say, hey, that was awesome, blah, 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 or whatever. But that person might think that I'm signaling them out as that's something that they're not consistently doing. And I never even thought about that before. So your behavior in a group environment versus, you know, let's say you're doing match analysis with one person versus match analysis with three people is very different.
Yeah. The process is consistent, right? And this is just the focus on development is when we talk about the person. These are the traits, you know, when we're talking about what we want the person to have at this foundation level, right? And, you know, this tends to be approached with our younger academy players, the 14s, the 15s, you know, and there's just some, I wanted to throw in some just real traits there that are key to us. But the analysis process is vital. There has to be a consistent way of doing it, but the way that, you know, you're looking to build different relationships. So for example, like if I'm working with a goalkeeper who I already have a really strong, really established relationship with, you know, I can maybe be a little bit more direct. If I'm working with a goalkeeper who is new to the organization, which I do have goalkeepers this year, you know, one of the things, you know, Phil and I like to do is ask them to come up with, you know, two things that, you know, two or three things that they liked in that moment, or two or three areas of improvement. And then with that, I say, listen, I'm going to do exactly the same, because I want to see how close or how far apart our thought process is in that moment. So that when we do come in the video room and we start to do a match analysis or just an analysis of a training session, we can start to kind of align our thoughts, right? Okay, this is what the goalkeeper is seeing. This is what the coach is seeing. Are they different moments? Is it the same moment, but two different complete perspectives? So, you know, the process of doing it is consistent, but maybe the avenue in which we get to that end result is very different depending on who you're working with. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, Saskia, I'm looking at this right here in regards to also the life balance
aspect.
That's
what I was looking at too.
And also, but that's something where, like, where Carl was just bringing up, you know, newer players into your program versus older players. Older players, you're going to be more familiar with their life outside, you know, of the field. Newer players, you know, have you ever had this situation where you've had to explore and kind of learn about the person off the fields to understand them better?
Well, you always should. I mean, it's not just when they, you know, clock in and clock out, you know, it's a balance. It's a life balance. And so, especially with younger players, I mean, you have to remember these kids are coming out of classes. You don't know how their day went. You don't know, like, if they failed a test. You don't know if they're getting bullied in school. You have no idea what's going on and how that's affecting them on the pitch, in the locker room, and everything like that. And so those life balances are super important. And it's not just with young players. I mean, Tony used to say it to me all the time. Like, I had to be well-rounded. I had to, you know, do things outside of just being in Florida and training twice a day with the national team. Like, what else are you doing? Where are you going when you have a day off? Like, get out of here. Don't, you know, so I tried to start surfing, which was a debacle, but you have to, but as a coach and as, you know, head of an academy or anything, you have to realize that as well. It's not just, oh, little Jimmy's here or little Pam is here and they should be on point, ready to play always. Let's go. You know, everything has to be working for you to get the best out of them.
Carl, you know, I'm looking at this right here and I'm thinking just in regards to that life balance thing too, that also must be very difficult dealing with, and again, I know I'm opening a Pandora's box here, but dealing with parents, because, you know, they might have come from a different generation where things were like, you're hyper-focused on one thing and that's what you do. You know, and you never give up. And if you do anything else, you know, if you're not, you know, if you're not training, somebody else is training, yada, yada.
Yeah. I mean, I must admit, we don't deal too much with parents at the academy. I must admit, you know, when the player enters, we have, you know, a certain relationship and we want to find out, you know, about the family, and every player's, you know, situation is a little different. You know, when we do our kind of, I would say, mid-year and then post-season reviews with the goalkeepers, we encourage every parent from the U15s down really to be a part of that process. Some parents choose to, some parents don't, and maybe when they don't, it's not because they don't want to, it's just because they're very, you know, of a belief that this is my son's journey, right? And therefore we're very grateful of the trust that they give us to be a part of that and you know, interact with them on a daily basis. But you can absolutely see the presence, the personality of the player resonate through their relationship with their parents, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I think that is, again, you'll hear me say that word relationship a lot, because there's a thousand relationships that, you know, you don't even realize that are there. And, you know, one, I'd say, unsavory or slight, you know, hint of a negative relationship might just come flooding out in the moment where you least expect it. So, you know, having a grip of, you know, who the player is and what their family situation like is important. And therefore, as a coach, you know, you can do some coaching off the field too, which is encouraging them to have a balance, which is that's why it's in there.
Yeah, I think things are changing, Mike, with when you have like academies, and even when I was at the Bulls and stuff like that, parents weren't even allowed at practice. Like, you know, like they weren't allowed on the fields, around the fields or anything like that. So you get to get some distance from back in the day when, you know, my parents were standing behind the goal, just like, you know what I mean? Although they weren't, my parents dropped me off and I was like, sorry, mom and dad. I was always like 5 minutes late to practice, which is why I'm always early. But it's like, but you know, I think those things are changing too. You have to get a break and some distance so that person can develop on their own also, you know, without that dynamic in their ear, the coach is there to be the coach.
Carl, before we move on from this slide right here, I have a question for you. Have you ever had a scenario where you've been working with a goalkeeper and recognized that their actions off the field are different than the actions on the field, and you have a conversation with them on why?
Yeah. I mean, all the time. It might be just a one-off, right? Like you find around about, you know, the winter break in the academy, you know, over when the academy takes a 3-week break over the winter time in the Northeast. And, you know, towards the end of those cycles is you start to really get a good sense of who these players are, because it's really easy when the season starts to do the right things, right? It's really easy to be on time. It's really easy to be the person that you think the coach wants you to be. But, you know, when this is a consistent, you know, 6-month effort or 10-month season, towards the end of that process, you start to find out like who the real person inside of the athlete really is. So, yeah, listen, it happens all the time. And I think one of the things, that's why the relationship is so important, because if I was just taking a snapshot of Saskia coming into training on a Tuesday, you know, the last week of December, when, you know, they might be thinking about like the vacations, or they've got family breaks, or they might, you know, might be just thinking, goodness, I just need some downtime here. I'm just going to mail it in for a day. But if I know that, you know, this is a consistent effort of who you are, my reaction isn't going to be as stern as, you know, if this is a consistent, you know, theme that, okay, we might need to have a conversation where this journey is actually for you, you know? So mm-hmm. the snapshot on the field is the worst thing that a coach can do, but also the snapshot off the field is the worst thing that a coach can do. And I think that's just a really good, you know, reminder we have to remind ourselves daily about that too, right? Because we're allowed to have bad days too as coaches, right? And I think that sometimes doesn't get talked about enough, you know?
Yeah, you know, I want to say this right now, that I was just thinking about the fact too, is that like, Saskia, like college showcase sessions, you know, which is a big thing for a lot of parents that listen to the show and a lot of young players that listen to the show, you know, a lot of players, their behaviors in that environment are so different than with their team. And a lot of people, whether it's coaches, whether it's, you know, other teams or whatever, kind of look at that as that's who that goalkeeper is. You know, and I know you've worked in a lot of college showcase environments. Obviously, Carl, you know, you did too as well when you were coaching at the collegiate level. But do you have any advice for young goalkeepers who go to a foreign environment like that to, you know, just be who they are in their match environment?
For me, it was always when I was speaking to guys going into any showcase environment, right? Is do the things, the simple things that you can control. Right. So when you go into a showcase environment, like you don't have no control on what team you're put on. Right. Mm-hmm. So you could be put on a team which has just 4 or 5 rock stars in front of you. And the ball never comes anywhere close to you. Right. But there's still the presence of the goalkeeper is like, what impact are they having on the people in front of them? So, you know, And listen, when I was, you know, playing back home in England, I remember getting picked for an academy tryout, and I literally didn't make a save. But it was how I communicated and the presence that I put in. And actually, when I got selected, I was actually really surprised, because I remember going home that day, I was mortified. I'm like, how am I going to get an opportunity? I literally touched the ball once, you know. But you know, again, I was very fortunate. Very famous goalkeeper coach back home in England, Simon Smith, who was, you know, involved in the FA and, you know, some senior Premier League teams. He was the coach at that time. And he was like, I just remember hearing that you just never stop talking and giving advice at the right time to the guys in front of you. Mm-hmm. And I thought that kind of blew my mind at the moment. And then, you know, fast forward 30 years now, when you're a coach, you're thinking, yeah, he was dead on. How important is that to have that presence, even though you can't do anything about what's happening in front of you?
It's huge. It goes back to what I was saying before, where it's like, are you making these great? You're making a bunch of upper 90 saves, but why? Like, if you walked into a college showcase and you were, you know, communicative, you like that one? Like, you were, you're organized.
That's a word, right?
It is a word. Okay. You're organizing. You have that presence. I see that. Your team sees that and everything like that. So it does. I would have picked you, Carl.
I have a question for you guys as well. Like when you're talking about these environments, the accountability in the moment, right? Like even like, and I've seen this as well, and Saskia and you guys, when you see it, when a goalkeeper makes a mistake, how like it stands out whether they take ownership of that moment or whether they start casting aspersions onto everybody else. You know, mistakes are going to happen in this position, right? But how important is it to be like, yeah, that's on me, guys. But you know what? Let's move on to the next one. Like,
incredibly important. How do you respond to it? How do you respond to, and especially in those environments when you don't know, when you're put into situations, you don't know the people in front of you and everything like that. Like, how are you going to react? Like, you know, are you passing blame? Are you able to move on? How is your presence afterwards? Like, how do you respond to mistakes is huge. Because that filters through the entire team.
You know, but I think also, you know, Carl, that kind of goes to, you know, what are the stimulants that are in front of this goalkeeper in their environment or in, you know, their surroundings of what they watch on social media or what they watch on television or whatever. Because I see a lot of young goalkeepers who are essentially mimicking the behaviors, good and bad, of the top goalkeepers in the world. And mm-hmm. not just on the technical and tactical side, but also on the emotional side too.
My thing is always like, I know you made the mistake, like brush it off. Like what are you gaining out of, let's say it's a negative reaction. Let's say you made a, like shanked the punt. Well, I don't know, something, you know, you did something and you made a mistake. How are you reacting to that? Is it a thing like, do you need some grandiose, like temper tantrum in a sense? So everybody knows, you made the mistake. We all know you made the mistake, you know, how are you moving forward from it? And you see that a lot, you know, and it's just like, that's not doing anything for us. Like, how are you building off of that?
I mean, I want to talk about this autonomous thing here, but when it regards to intelligence, it's not just about intelligence on the field, but intelligence of right foreshadowing, like what's going to happen next and like how this is going to affect the rest of the match based on your behavior and the rest of your season. You know, Carl, I'll just give the example of, I remember a couple of years ago, there was a young goalkeeper in the league, and I'm not going to call out who it is, who was being celebrated for their antics and gone viral because of their antics and all that sort of thing. And my thing is, I talked to another, you know, coach in the league at the time, and they said, I don't think he's going to be in the league long. I don't think he's going to be in the league long, you know, and
Argentina.
Oh, the Emmy. That's a whole other conversation. But
that's still off the field. That's still, it's ridiculous to me. So
yeah.
I just had to throw, you know, it's pissed no. in. I was so upset.
Yeah. Carl, I want to ask about autonomous because I think this is something that's so important, especially at the younger ages where they might be in environments where I get them in a private environment, a private, you know, group setting, group clinic environment where at their club, they're being joysticked or micromanaged. You know, I love seeing goalkeepers that can train on their own, can play in a match on their own. They're not looking over their shoulder, looking for the answers to the questions or asking their teammates what to do.
First of all, I wish my spell check was autonomous, considering I can't spell the word building at the top of the page.
I thought that was intentional for like building.
Yeah, no, that's what your focus has been on, is that you missed
it. It's driving me nuts, honestly. I was listening to your question, Michael. I wasn't. But yeah, I mean, that autonomous behavior is, again, you know, you're talking about on the field, right? Off the field, but it's, are you having to remind a goalkeeper once they reach a certain level, right? And now whether it's be academy or into the collegiate ranks or into the, you know, the entry level to the professional pathway, they're at a level where, you know, if you have to remind people to do things, you're already so far behind where you need to be. So, you know, this building the player and are they autonomous in their actions, whether that be on or off the pitch, I think it's such a valuable trait to have. And again, you know, the person, the player, this is the player standpoint where you're learning how the club wants to play. Are they doing that actions or are they completing their actions, playing certain passes, you know, saying certain words in a specific moment, automatically, or are they looking for a little feedback? Are they looking for keys? You know, because again, we're not, you know, you guys talked about joysticking. We're not going to do that. We can't do that because when you get to the first team level and you're playing in Subaru in front of 20,000 people, like the coach can't be hurt. So all of a sudden that joystick moment, it's dead. It's dead in the water. Right. So I think it is such an important trait is that like in the moments where everything around you is so hectic. Phil uses this word where it's like in the moment of, you know, a hectic action, can you just find that moment of calm? Mm-hmm. Right? And normally it's that moment of calm, if a goalkeeper is able to exude that, where the autonomous behavior comes flooding through.
Yeah, no, I love what you just said right there about being able to stay calm within the chaos. You know, that's something, you know, that we've talked about. I think we even spoke about it with Jill Lloyd and, you know, a few weeks ago when she was on, in regards to, you know, when there's so many different compound, you know, movements going on and different actions and scanning and all that, how do you keep the brain leveled? I want to talk a lot about this, about learning to win, because I think that's something that's really, really important. Because there's a difference between, Carl, in my opinion, winning and learning to win.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we play a sport which is a competition, right? And I think it's a lot of people kind of deviate away. And listen, it's a polarizing topic, right? Like, when do you start to place an emphasis on the winning component? But I think the learning to win is just fitting all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together to get the final picture that you want. And I think if you're able to do the right things at the right times, then you can almost say to the players that most often than not, the result will take care of itself. And I think it's the process of how we train our goalkeepers in terms of the decision-making. You know, we talk, if you notice here, there's the passion for the position, and you have to have that like off the pitch too. There's a personality trait in terms of behavioral, but you know, the it is a process. And even at the senior level, and playing at the highest level in the world, Saskia, you can say that it's still a process, right? It's still a process. You still have to embrace the fact that you're learning about yourself and learning about the experience that you're faced in front of you every single day, no matter what your level of experience is. So the treating it like it's an educational platform, just in a very different setting, is a really important trait that we try and encourage these guys to embody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I mean, just, I'm just thinking about the fact, you know, Saskia, that like you talk about, you know, nobody cares whether you won the ECNL national championship or, you know, that showcase event, winter showcase or whatever type of thing.
Well, however, in context, what I mean is when we go back to the discussion of what kind of goalkeepers are you picking, are you trying to develop your goalkeepers for the future? Or are you just picking the really, because winning is all that matters to you. You know, I mean, that's what I mean by that. Like, I want to be developed. I want to, like we just said, I want to learn every day. I have a bigger picture down the road for me. So if you turn around and say, hey, you lost in the national, which of course I do tease, and Julie Foudy, if you're listening, we beat you in the semifinals and national championships when I was 16. So I will never let you live that down. But that's just a personal thing. In hindsight, like, how much did I learn from that moment, and how much did that grow for me as a keeper down the road? Like, and that was me wanting to constantly get better and constantly learn and stuff like that. Did it mean something in the time? It did. But what did I, how did I grow from it is what really it means to me.
Yeah, you know,
and whenever I get the chance to throw that in, I do. Sorry.
No, but I'm thinking about that, Carl, though. It's that thing. It's like, you know, yay, hooray, you won the title. Why did you win the title? Mm-hmm. You know, and let's see how the building blocks led to you winning that title. Because if you don't know why you won, how do you replicate that? How do you continue that progress?
The review, and that's where that process we talked about, we touched upon, like the match analysis process, mm-hmm. right? Like the review is all, well, I would probably say more so important than the actual planning for the success, right? Because, you know, can you do it once, or do you want to be a serial winner? Do you want to be a serial high-level performer? So the review in terms of, you know, enjoying and embracing the moment of success that we're talking about, but just going back, you know, at the right time, the time is important to do it, but and look at, okay, what led to this, mm-hmm. you know, allows, and it is the process is the word that we use, but it's key, that review and how you do it is critical. It really is.
Yeah, I totally agree.
And Carl, I know we're about an hour right now, so let us know, you know, whenever you need to start dismounting. But this is a fascinating conversation. I know we could go for hours.
Yeah, I can nerd out about goalkeeping all afternoon, so no problem.
You know, it makes me think, and I'm not just throwing it out because I have the hat on, but the process that UCLA went through to win the national championship this year, and knowing that, being with them the past the 2 years before, and what was the process that we didn't win, and what were the changes that were made with Marg and her new staff coming in? And I've talked to the parents, I've talked to the players about what the changes were off the field and the professionalism. And this is no knock on Sam and those guys or anything. I thought we had an incredibly great crew as well, but the changes that were made to tweak that, to bring them to the national championship, but now to repeat it, which I think they can, because now they have this building block and this process on and off the field as individuals, with presence, with everything that you need as a team. It's not just a one-off. Like, what did you learn? That's what we're talking about, from the process that took you to win this. It's not the final action, it's the process.
Yeah, you know, Carl, I have a question here about the ruthless, because I think that might be misinterpreted by some people out there. What do you mean by ruthless?
Well, I think the essence of competition is, you know, are you better than the person who's facing directly in front of you, right? And I think it's in the rawest form, it's like, are you willing to embrace that, right? And as a goalkeeper, it's me versus a person who's trying to hit the ball as hard as they can at me, right? Like, let's just call a spade here. Like, that's what it is, right? So like, the ruthlessness of it is like, okay, like, I know what's the situation that I'm faced with here. Like, I'm not trying to sugarcoat it. I don't want to try and, you know, make it a little, you know, less palatable, because this might not be comfortable for me. But the building the competitor is like, are you willing to be ruthless within the culture that we set, within the standards that we want to maintain, within the environment that we work so hard to create and embrace? Are you willing to do everything that you possibly can to come out on the positive side of that competition? And I think it's probably the one position on the field where it is about as, you know, simply put, as it's you versus me, right?
Absolutely.
And that is, for me, it's a trait that our competitors, you know, as they transition up the pyramid, have to have.
Absolutely. And for that, I just thrived in that setting. Like, every day brought it, for me, and I'm not patting myself on the back, it's just one of the things that I loved about playing, loved about the position, and loved about going to training every single day and going to games. It was just like, no way, not today. Mia, you're not beating me. Michelle, you're not beating me. Nothing. It was me. It was us, me, Bri, you know, whoever else was there, against them. Always, every session, every drill, every everything. And that mentality to flip that switch and to be there and be present in those moments and take that, that's just the next level, to be able to bring that. It's not going through the motions.
Yeah, you know, I want to talk about this, Carl, really quickly with ruthless, because I'm just thinking about, in regards to, you know, session design and how you behave, you know, within your sessions as a coach, you know, and we're trying to develop presence. Like, do you have conversations on, like, when you as a coach need to be ruthless and when you as a coach need to back off?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the point of communication in a training session and the point of communication during a match session is really does really dictate how powerful you want that point to be, right? If your timing is off, you know, not waiting to the end of an activity, not waiting till the end of a set, you know, or in a game, you know, trying to communicate with your goalkeeper when they still have things in front of them that they need to organize and be aware of, you know, the power in that moment is completely gone. So as coaches, you know, you go through the coaching courses, you talk about, you know, coaches can speak for 2 minutes, but they really haven't said anything at all in them 2 minutes. Right? Like, it's like, you know, sometimes, you know, we got a couple of former players at the club here, Brazilian players, and they say, you know, too much water kills the plants, right? But also, not enough water kills the plants too, right? So it's finding that, like, that really fine balance of when to say, what to say, what not to say. And the timing for me is, you know, you want the goalkeepers to exude that moment of calm in amongst where everything is hectic. I think that's really important advice for a coach too, right? when you feel like you have to get up and say something, it's almost like, okay, just give it a couple of seconds and just think, do you really want to say it?
And I usually think to myself, let me see if they figure it out as well. You know, it's a mistake that keeps happening. Let me see if they figure this out. Because like you said, when you're playing in front of 30,000 people, I can't fix this. You know, like I'm not going to yell from them. I'm not going to joystick or anything like that. So let's see in the run of play, whether it's a small side or whether it's something, if you can figure out this consistent thing that you're doing and you can make that adjustment, you know, and you can self-coach. And then if you can't, then you can jump up and say something.
Yeah.
But I love that because, like, right here in the decision making, in regards to just like solving problems in and out of possession autonomously, you know, and making those decisions and exploring what works and what doesn't work, you know, and allowing them to make those mistakes. I think that builds the presence too, you know, because then that self-confidence comes, that self-belief that you're talking about, Carl.
Yeah. And again, in that decision making, right, makes effective interventions. And that's what we're trying to do as a coach too. We're trying to make sure that our interventions, whatever moment we choose, maximizes the level of effectiveness, right? And and I think that Phil and I talk a lot about, you know, when coaches and the way that we train our goalkeepers, it's really all about decision making. We don't really do scripted service. We don't really give the guys, okay, like a routine or a situation. It's multiple decision making. And as a coach, there's something about inside you for like the ego of a coach wants this session to go well, wants it to look good, right? But when you talk about the way that we train our goalkeepers, like sometimes it doesn't look good, but sometimes it's at those moments when things don't look good that the maximum reward for the goalkeepers is present, right? And I think
absolutely,
you know, being able to control that calmness and control your ego as a coach is a really important skill set.
You know, as we start wrapping up here, you know, Carl, and I appreciate you taking the time. I mean, this is awesome. And I think we could, again, like we could delve on this for a while. And I'm sure, you know, people will want to connect with you and get this presentation themselves to kind of go through it and everything. But
we got to fix the title.
Which one? There's another one?
No.
I hope not. Oh. Goodness me. Hang on. Don't ask me a question for 20 seconds. Wait, let me make sure.
I wouldn't have noticed anyway. So
I want to talk about this because I want to talk about the presence and personality and how it evolves from the academy to the collegiate to the professional level. And then before that, really quickly, Carl, is there a difference between the U23 and the collegiate level? Because you're essentially talking about the same age of human being.
Yeah. For me, there is, you know, there really is. You're right. The age is the same, but the backgrounds in collegiate level, both on the pitch and off the pitch, is varied, right? You know, mm-hmm. Schools are recruiting players from different levels, from different cultures. So, and then when you get into a second team environment and transitioning into a first team environment, the vast majority of those players came straight from an academy. You know, especially with us, straight from an academy into a professional setting of the same club. So there's the level, you know, of the players. We had a couple of college guys in with preseason with us down in Clearwater, and then upon discussion, you know, they would talk about just the level of detail is, you know, way higher at the professional level, even the youngest professional level. You know, there's obviously, you know, sometimes maybe the players might be stronger. Or, you know, some guys might be a little bit more explosive, but the level of technical detail, the level of tactical understanding, we found, you know, in our second team environment is just a little tilted, I'd say. but, you know, it's when I was going to school, I actually went to a school outside of my kind of catchment area. And it wasn't because it was a better school. It's just who I was going to be going to school with. And that's a really important thing for me. It's not where you are. It's who are you with, right? And I think the culture is key with that. And I worked at a Division I level up in Providence at the Big East, and had some success up there. And then I've also worked with academies and now in a professional setting. And you know the levels, you know, they're not that far apart, but it's just maybe the attention to detail especially even in the MLS Next Pro level, is what the players who are good footballers come in and maybe struggle with, you know?
Yeah. You know, I'm looking at this like here, you know, Saskia, as we kind of wind down here and kind of just saying academy, it's about me, collegiate, it's about us, and professional, it's about them.
What do you guys think of that? Because that is something that, you know, I've talked about a lot, and, you know, in thinking about like, what are the differences? So, you know, I'm not saying the professional, there isn't an us and there isn't a me component, because there really is. It's just, mm-hmm. that is for us, the evolution, I guess, of the thought process, right? Because in an academy for us, like our academy, yes, we want to have good teams, but our end goal is to get player X into the first team. And what does player X need to do? That's our goal. That's our mission. Good. We still want to have successful groups. Don't get me wrong, but that is the goal. When they get into the collegiate, okay, then again, they might take a different path. But now, you know, the nature of the collegiate season, the timing of it, the level of kind of interaction that you have in such a short space of time, it really isn't us, right? Like, mm-hmm. this is, we're a band of brothers, you know, yeah. I just want to make sure we want to do it together. But then when you get into the professional setting, you need to have the me, that's the selflessness, right? You need to have the us, that's the culture and the awareness. But it's like, now it's the competition, right? And this is the you, hopefully all the learning how to win starts to talk, what can I do now to stop the other team winning, right? And it's always really interesting, I feel, when guys come out of college, you almost have to start to retrain them to be, we expect you to be able to have an impact with the group. We expect you to know what you mm-hmm. can and can't do, and whatever you can't do, you need to fix it. But now, like, what can you do from a personality and presence standpoint to stop these guys, you know, achieving success, you know?
Yeah. You know, and I just, you know, obviously, Saskia, you know, you've played at the highest level, you know, and then Carl and I played goalkeeper. But you know, just kind of as we finish this up right here, you know, you playing at that highest level, was it expected that, like, you've already done the me work, and the us work, and that team unity should already be there? So literally we're training to stop them. So our focus is on them and stopping them, because we already know what we have.
Not with the US team. Okay. Not back then. For us, it was, as long we were such a force that it was more about them having to figure out how to stop us, you know, and us sticking, like, in a sense. That it's a hard question to ask me, because that 99 group and everything like that was like it was such a us and such a rah-rah and such a once in a generation lifetime team that we still talk every day, that it's a different question to ask me. Do you see what I'm saying? Like,
no, I got you. It's a different world. I mean, if I was talking, right. If I was talking to Casey or Alyssa today, it's a very different world in regards to the environment, you know, the culture. Competitive look.
Yeah. And it was very level. About us, because we were doing something that nobody had done before. We were filling stadiums that nobody had said, everybody said we couldn't. We were doing things that people said, no, you have no place to do this. You're women. Like, so it was a very us mentality, and let's show the world that they're wrong, you know, which is what England's going through right now, and like, and so on and so forth. So I think that that's a different question to ask me personally.
No, you're right. That's more of a question to ask, you know, Sandy McIver, Ellie Roebuck, Mary Earps, you know, that sort of a thing, you know, trying to pull themselves on that world stage, Carl, you know, and win a World Cup, you know, this year, hopefully play against the US in the final, which would be pretty awesome if that happened.
Yeah. Because I think the world doesn't see the US that way anymore. Do you know what I mean? Like, and so now it's like, now US does have to think, what are we going to do about them, England? What are we going to do about them? Like, you know, Holland, what are we going to do about them, Japan? Like they do think that way now.
And very few players at the highest level even get a chance to think like that, Saskia, right? Like, very few players, you know, get a chance to go in and go, like, no matter, I don't really care what anybody else does, because we know that what we have in our group is so special that we believe so strongly in that we're just going to kind of go full steam ahead, and I don't really care who's in front of us, right? Like, very few elite level athletes in any sport get a chance to think like that. So it's pretty special that, you know, when that question is asked that you can answer it that way, you know. it really is, like, because not many groups, and even, you know, now in the coaching ranks, like, not many groups get a chance to do that. So that's pretty special.
Yeah, definitely we had the wrong person on the panel for that, for that one.
It's great to have both perspectives and everything, maybe one of my other teammates would answer it differently, but
Mike, that last slide there, that I put that book in there by mm-hmm. Marshall Goldsmith. It's one of my favorite books, you know, and it's, I love that saying, is what got you here won't get you there, right? Because, like, how often do you have players who have achieved success and then they take the next step up and they think, because I've had success in whatever level, I'm just going to be able to do the same thing, mm-hmm. right? And now they have to kind of reinvent themselves. And that's what we talk about when players come out of college into a pro environment. You almost have to reinvent them, because and make them realize, like, what brought them success at said level will not get them at the new one. And in that book, that quote, you know, behavioral problems, not technical skills, are separate what the great from the near great. And that just sums up the personality and presence of a goalkeeper, right? It's the behavioral problems. And it could be actions. It could be just the way that you communicate, the perspective that you have. And that's just kind of summing up the importance of this, you know, this aspect of the position, right? The presence and personality of a goalkeeper is just critical in what could be what separates you from your nearest competitor, or being the best that you can be, at least.
Absolutely. So do we have time for this last slide, and then we'll wrap up? Do we got time? Because I think this is a very important one, because this is in regards to talking about your process at Union, Carl, in regards to building the presence through feedback and reflection.
Yeah. So again, it makes me look like my presentation, the format must have rejigged everything, because it's nice and neat on my desktop. So I don't want people to see what this guy can't put a presentation together. this is just our reflection feedback, and it's when we do this, you know, we're very fortunate that all of our training sessions, matches are recorded for these guys, and they have immediate access to it once they walk into the changing room, and then. As coaches as well, you know, you're talking about the ego of the coach as well, and what the athlete is, you know, staring back at, and sometimes you're a product of your environment, is that, you know, if something doesn't go well, it's not automatically the athlete's fault, right, as a coach. And you have to look at yourself within. So, like, this morning, you know, I hit a couple of balls that didn't go where I wanted them to go in training. And I stand up in front of my guys, like, and I don't need to do this. I'm like, yeah, listen, that was awful. That's on me. You know, and I'm not saying that everyone has to do that. I'm not saying you have to do it every single time, but that humility in that moment is key. So when we're talking about the reflections of the guys, it's so, so important. So then when we do get a chance to meet with the guys, you know, they know that we've thought, I know that they've thought about it. They get a chance to, like, air their reflections. We make the adjustments. You know, we have an open discussion about it. And sometimes that can be an individual or a group setting. And I think that's really important too, that players can give, I can give my thoughts and feedback about you, Saskia, in front of Michael. And I want you to take it in the way in which it's meant to be received. I don't Absolutely. Want you to get defensive in that moment. So that group setting is really important, because you think about, you know, when you were playing, like, how many different avenues were you getting feedback, coaches, media, you know, like, it's coming at you from all angles, right? So you've got to learn how to receive that feedback. And then you get a chance to kind of go back out on the pitch and implement it through performance. And I think that's just our, you know, closed, like, feedback loop in the simplest form. But, you know, it starts about the personality and presence. And I think having these guys have the ability and the confidence to do that automatically helps and translates onto the pitch, you know?
No. By the way, Carl, you know that you're giving some great information when Saskia is so quiet, and also when
I was laughing
to go to hour and 18 minutes into the podcast.
I was laughing, like, because I hate when people talk about their, like, call themselves in the third person, but whenever I shank a ball when I'm training kids, they always laugh because I'm like, oh, Saskia, like, and I'm like, that's all me. Yeah. I'm like, yeah. But I you know, take response. I was just thinking about that in my head. I was like, oh my god.
Like, yeah.
But by the way, Carol, I am going to blame a MacBook Pros for redoing the program. I just tried to reload it in here, trying to hope that it would.
Oh, I was only just airing my own OCD grievances about my PowerPoint presentation.
Hey, my dyslexia, you could have kept that W up there the whole time, and I would have never noticed it. I would have been like, that's cool.
Oh, oh my gosh. Well, Carl, we appreciate you taking the time and everything like that. And obviously, you know, you've got your, you know, your contact info right over here. As we wrap up, is there kind of anything that you would kind of want to share with the audience who may have some, you know, more questions for you in regards to any, I don't know if you have any upcoming webinars or anything like that.
Yeah, I think, you know, the first team season starts this weekend. And so it's a pretty busy time for the staff, right, as a whole, with Phil getting ready for the match this weekend. And so not too many webinars right now once the season gets rolling. But I think, you know, for me, like the game is being invented, right? So anybody comes out as a coach, and I'm pretty passionate about this, that says, I've got this brand new way of doing things. And, you know, this is state of the art. Like, the game's evolving. I think innovation is important, but don't be frightened to share information, you know? And like I said, I don't mind kind of putting this out there. I don't mind sharing it with anybody who may want to kind of look at it after this webinar on the back of it or ask questions, because, you know, with Phil, there's a lot of work in the community, clearly, you know, in terms of his kind of conference. And we just want to be willing to share, because yes, we work for a professional MLS club, but we also have a responsibility to grow the game too. So it's, you know, this is not kind of hidden or secret or private information, and I'm more than willing to share it off the back of it, you know.
Yeah. And speaking of sharing for the entire community to benefit everybody, you can do that yourself as well, too, on the Union Sports, the Goalkeeper app. It is free. You can download at this smart link right here. Share, engage with top professionals out there, other like-minded coaches and players and parents. We really, really appreciate everybody who's been posting content over there right now. I know, shout out to Juan Cervantes over at UCLA. He's been posting a lot of stuff. Jake Davis, Houston Dynamo, been posting a lot of stuff. And for those of you guys who are on the platform, keep engaging. The only way we learn is by engaging with each other. It's great to just share, but there's got to be some sort of communication as well, too, and provide some context into what you're sharing as well, too. Because if you just post a session and there's no context, it's hard for people to engage. It's hard for people to learn from it. And I know that's something that we've been very, very passionate about. Contact at InsideThe18Media.com if you have a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion, or at Goalkeeper Podcast on the Union app. You can reach out to Saskia Weber at S Weber on the Union app. You can reach out to me at Michael Magid on the Union app. Carl, again, thanks for all the time, man. Excited for Philadelphia this year. You know, obviously a successful season last year, going all the way to the MLS Cup and everything. And I know, you know, it seems like everything's going to continue flying over there, you know, both on the goalkeeping side and the club side as well, too. So really looking.
Tell Phil hi.
I will do. I'll tell him about coming on with you guys. So he's, I'm sure he's going to text me, you know, saying, you know, you suck. But
constructive criticism, Phil.
Yeah, no, it's very constructive. But I appreciate you guys kind of inviting me on to be a part of the discussion. You know, like I said, I love kind of talking about the position, and it's been a lot of fun. So thanks a lot.
Cool. And we got to get you on the Union, Dan. So if you can, I mean, you're already at the Union, but you got to be on the Union too, because yeah. we'd love for people to be able to learn from you on there. That's all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys.